nutshell. All right, good morning, everybody. I call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, March 27th. Wish everybody happy Easter week. I've got on my Easter egg tie. We've got a fairly substantial agenda today. Laura thinks it's a three-cough-drop agenda. We'll start as we always start, as we honor America with Pledge of Allegiance. If you wouldn't mind joining us, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. First item, as always, is public comment. Number one, it's an opportunity for members of the public to address topics on this agenda or really anything you'd like to address. Anybody wishing to do so, come right up. And seeing no one moving the microphone, we'll move on to proclamation recognizing April 2018 as National County Government Month. Leanne, you're going to help us through this one? You want to say anything before I read the proclamation or after?
I'll say after.
Okay, so I'm going to read the proclamation. National County Government Month, April 2018, serving the underserved. Whereas the nation's 3,069 counties serving more than 300 million Americans provide essential services to create healthy, safe, and vibrant communities. And whereas counties provide health services, administer justice, keep communities safe, foster economic opportunities, and much more. And whereas Story County and all counties take pride in our responsibility to protect and enhance the health, welfare, and safety of our residents in efficient and cost-effective ways. And whereas through the National Association of Counties, President Roy Charles Brooks, Serving the Underserved Initiative, NACO is focused on the critical role counties play in breaking multi-generational cycles of poverty. And whereas each year since 1991, the National Association of Counties has encouraged counties across the country to actively programs and services to the public we serve. And now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Rick Sanders, Chair of the Story County Board of Supervisors, do hereby proclaim April 2018 as National County Government Month and encourage all county officials, employees, schools, and residents to participate in county government celebration activities. That's the proclamation. Leanne, add to it.
Just a quick calendar of events that we would do in April, which is right around the corner, starting next week. One, this is a poster that NACO designed. These will go up in all county buildings. We would start kickoff next week, April 3rd, with the coffee and open house starting at 9:30, just outside the public meeting room here. Also, next Tuesday is National Service Recognition Day. We did a proclamation on that last week or the week prior. With that, there's two recognitions the board will be making, one for a Citizen of the Year recognition, Citizen of the Year by Story County, and then the Making Democracy Work, the League of Women Voters. That recognition as well will take place next week. On the back end, staff will be distributing the county's work, which is an online educational game. I gave you both copies, all three of you copies of both these programs. And then the county solutions classroom curriculum. This is something we do annually. We send to middle school and high school teachers that do social studies, government, etc. Press release, of course, and then we have social media postings that will be every day in the month of April. And what those are, it's going to be an employee a day, why they serve Story County and what they get from that. So I'm going around to every department and trying to get as many pictures as we can, a whole 30 days worth. And again, as I said, social media. Pleasure too.
Outstanding.
Any questions?
Board, questions or comments?
Nick, for the people that don't know, NACO stands for?
National Association of Counties. Roy Charles Brooks, who is the current president of NACO, is a county supervisor out of Texas and a really, really nice man, and is absolutely committed to serving the underserved.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got a really good promotional campaign going in April, so that sounds good. I would make the motion with one small change. You know where it's coming, right? We substitute I, Rick Sanders, for we, the Board of Supervisors.
I have no problem with that. I would second that.
And I would just point out that I didn't write this proclamation.
Did I say a word?
No, no, I saw it. I just pointed that out. So we got a motion and a second. Olson?
Yeah, aye.
Kitty?
Aye.
Sanders, aye. It passes with the aforementioned change. Next is agency reports. We have access listed first. Oh, okay, outstanding. Yeah, right here.
Good morning.
Perfect. Start by introducing yourself.
Good morning. My name is Virginia Griesheimer. I'm currently an administrator in Access. We are the Assault Care Center here in Ames, or over in Ames. We're not here. I'm here to kind of present our quarterly report and give some agency-wide updates. So this year has definitely been one of transition for our agency. We began this current fiscal year with interim leadership in place. Went through an exhaustive search for a new executive director, and I'm pleased to report and have her here with me today. Tess joined us a month ago yesterday. It's been a very busy month. She comes to us with nearly a decade of experience in a broad array of victim service positions. Most recently, she was a prevention program manager down at Drake. So we're very excited to have her on board and move forward from here. Excuse me, we raised her on the block. So in our last report to this board, we provided progress updates on our housing model. We did make significant changes back in the summer of 2016, and we're pleased to report that the outcomes continue to be positive with that change. So during our pilot year in our scattered site emergency housing, we did make changes to the structure of that client service to reflect the needs and desires of the clients that we had received through survey data. So these changes centered around two core components, client-controlled security and greater autonomy during their stay. Clients are now able to actually come and go as they please through keyless coded door entry, and we are providing keys to the rented spaces that we have. So staffing is now done primarily on an as-needed basis to encourage mobility and equitable access to staff for all of our clients, regardless of in which unit they're being sheltered. Volunteer staff are available to clients in the evenings, and then we still do have paid overnight staff that are there from 9 p.m. to 9 a.m., providing some consistency during the overnight time, covering our crisis line. But the remainder of the time, we're a little bit more in flux, which has proved to be quite positive for our clients. So 2 years after moving to scattered site sheltering, we've seen our length of stay decrease on an average of 20 days. So now households with children are averaging about 31 days with us, and individuals are averaging about 27. So that is really what we wanted to see come out of this, a shorter amount of time for folks to be experiencing homelessness and a greater turnover for them to be exiting into either permanent or temporary housing. Our outcomes at the time of exit have also been positively impacted by the model change. For those who are exiting our scattered shelter sites, about 47% of those are exiting into permanent housing. An additional 32% are able to secure temporary housing solutions, so that includes staying with family or friends. And we do see that as a positive outcome also, because it means that they're reconnecting to their community. They're finding space and safe housing with friends or family, and in general, decreasing the isolation that comes with being a person who has experienced violence. Research indicates that many people experiencing homelessness are able to actually self-resolve within 14 days. So that our housing strategy in terms of the advocacy that we are providing has shifted as well. So we are giving people the space they need to do that self-resolution the first couple of weeks, and then coming in with very goal-focused housing advocacy in that second or third week. Our decision to step back from a 24-hour supervisory role within our shelter spaces and really trust clients in knowing what they need during this time really has proven to not only be an effective programmatic change, but one that is truly, it speaks to the mission that we have as an agency. So we're very excited to be able to present outcomes and quantitative data that backs that up. Our Homicide and Violent Crimes program is our other newest program. That one started a little over a year ago. Since July of 2017, that program that is only staffed by one advocate has served 88 clients, 50 of which have been out of Story County. So that program is very unique in that it's one advocate serving many folks who have been impacted by one felony level crime. Only having one advocate to staff that program full time has proved to be quite challenging because there are times when criminal trials are scheduled concurrently. So we have been able to utilize our intern program and have a few part-time staff there to support that one full-time advocate, and that has proven to be just the change that we needed. That program is still stressed, but since it is so new, we have an opportunity to really shift and make sure that we're meeting the needs of all of those folks with the limited staffing capacity that we have. April is Sexual Assault Month, so our sexual abuse outreach team is very busy. Their calendar of events is as long as my arm. So we are trying to focus our social media campaign on kind of 30 days of SAM to let people know all the different events that our staff are currently a part of. And through our role as a community partner with the Green Dot program at Iowa State, we're really focusing a lot of our time on that outreach with the student population, really making good on all of the promises and activities and planning that we've done throughout the last year is that new program has gotten set up. So for those of you who aren't aware of Green Dot, it's a prevention program that focuses on both kind of active and passive prevention techniques. So engaging peers in conversation about violence prevention and also building up people's capacity to step in safely and intervene when they see violence about to happen. So much more comprehensive program, very focused in the result that we're looking for. So we're excited to be on board and be a partner to Iowa State as they get that up and going. Our outreach to male victims as well as engagement and capacity building have also been creative and energetic over the last year. We are planning to still hold our One Blue String event. We're going to break it into two separate events this year. So on April 12th from 8 to 11 at London Underground, Jake Turner of the band Mississippi Jake is going to be kind of taking a lead as the voice of that particular event. He's also been a guest on one of our podcasts that our male engagement specialist has been developing over the last year. It's called Men in Progress. So Bobby Dennis, who is our male outreach staff member, he has sat down with local AIMS leaders, all men, to talk about how they have developed in their masculinity, what barriers they've come up against, and how they see their role in the community as a voice for violence prevention. other guests on that podcast include Andrew Allen, Mike Tupper, Mike Furjack, Elijah Hansen, just to name a few. So it's been a very well-rounded podcast, and we're excited that that's going to be going. The second One Blue String event, we're going to have a live music at the KHOI studio on April 18th from 7 to 8. So many different touch points so that we can engage this community and really let them know what the message of the One Blue String is. So it represents the 1 in 6 men who are affected by sexual violence as children. And that really is a kind of untouched population still. We want to really make sure that people are aware that violence is not just something that impacts women, it's something that impacts all of us. We have partnered with the Emergency Residence Project and YSS to do Reggie's Sleep Out. Unfortunately, the very unseasonable and unexpected weather this weekend actually forced us to cancel. We really made that decision based on safety concerns that we had in that stadium. We're excited that we have had, for the most part, very positive support coming out of that decision. And we are excited to carry that event into next year because it is a vital awareness event to hold. We were just, unfortunately, our hands were kind of tied with having to make that decision this year. So we're hoping that we can recapture that energy and make the third year really fantastic. So to conclude, we've used $33,444 of our $57,486 that was allocated to us by Story County for this current fiscal year. We have cleaned out all of the funds allocated to the domestic abuse crisis, it's actually called battery and crisis intervention in our asset application, and our sexual abuse counseling, otherwise known as the rape relief counseling and support service. We are on track to clean out all of the remaining funds, if not by the end of the fiscal year, much sooner. So we do appreciate the unwavering support of Story County, their supervisors, and all of the other asset partners. Your willingness to continue to support these services really speaks to your awareness of how these crimes impact the citizens here in Story County. Thank you.
Absolutely, Elizabeth. Virginia, great job. Thank you very much for presenting. Tess, welcome. We're excited you're here. So Story County has a long history, much longer than any of the three of us sit up here, of supporting Access and the programs that Access provides. And I don't see a way that would change any time in the future. We just value so much what you guys bring to the community. So thank you so much. Laura Smarty, questions or comments?
Nothing. I tell you, Virginia, this is very well written, and it gets right to it, and it's a quick read. Congratulations. Some people don't use words as well as you do, and I appreciate that. And congratulations on getting tests, because I know that will probably pull some stuff off your plate.
Absolutely.
So very good job. Continue what you're doing, Rick said, as well as I did.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the report. Yes. I do have a couple questions. No big surprise for me.
No.
Okay. The first one has to do with the drawdown of funds.
Right.
Because already now, if you've used up the domestic abuse and you've used up the rape relief, okay, and I assume then you're pulling money from other sources. Okay. Did you use them up last asset fiscal funding also?
Yes. At this point in the fiscal year, we had spent all of our allocations. So we're figuring out, as we were kind of inheriting systems, how to best rearrange those funds throughout the year to make sure that we're spending down everything that has been given to us, and that we're doing so in a very pragmatic way.
Okay. And I'm thinking more about from the spend down, if you've already used them and we're sitting here in March and you've got another quarter to go, is there a need for increasing the ask? Not saying there'd be the money there. I'm just saying, you know.
Of course, there's always a need for increasing.
I understand that, but, you know, in my previous life as a journalist, having covered asset for so long, I do see some agencies that spend down very quickly year after year after year, and their ask never seems to be very large. Mm-hmm. There are others that I think are very optimistic in their ask, you know, knowing what capabilities the funders are. But it's just a question, you know, so that you're not having to divert money necessarily or as much from
other funds. So. We're always aggressively seeking funding. So now that we, all three of us, myself, Tess, and our finance manager, Lisa, have a better picture of how asset works in general and are able to better understand the puzzle that is kind of managing nonprofit funding, we're going to continue aggressively seeking increased ask from really all of our funders, knowing especially that unfortunately, Victim Services is kind of always potentially on the chopping block at the state and federal level. But it is really important for us to call on our local funders because you guys see the impact. You're here in the communities that we're serving. Some of you may know someone who has received services from us. So we hope that from all of our funders to make sure that these services are maintained and not only just maintained at the level they are now, that we are growing to meet a growing need.
Okay. And then I'm glad to see that the scattered housing has worked out. I have to admit that when the model changed, I looked at that and was a little nervous.
Yeah.
You know, okay, everybody is hesitant about change. You know. So those are impressive figures, how much the increase has been in the self-help of the clients and the increase.
It was really, it was a big risk for us to take, and I'm really glad that it paid off and that all of the thinking that went into making that change was sound. But yeah, I think it was finally an opportunity for us to kind of put our money where our mouth was in terms of trusting our clients with what they need, not being there in a sense of having to provide supervision or unnecessary support. We're still as accessible for our clients as we always were, but we are now physically communicating that we trust you to be in this space and be in this space safely. And if there is anything you need, we're always a phone call away.
Super. Let's talk for just one second, since Laura's brought it up, about philosophies of many of our not-for-profits and the way they spend through their dollars and why we see so many of them hit this point roughly three-quarters of the way through the fiscal year and have spent through all the designated or restricted funding. And it is simply a management style, just because we've spent all the way through the fund, the designated or restricted funding doesn't mean they're completely out of funding. It just means they're working their way into the portion that's not restricted, not designated. And I think, and I'll look at Deb Shildroff, we see many of our well-run human service agencies follow that exact model so that you're not scrambling the last 45 days of the fiscal year to get claims in. Yeah. So that's part of the deal.
Right.
Yep.
Good point.
We reached that end of year panic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Any other questions or comments?
Thank you, Virginia.
Thank Great you. Job. Thanks. Tess, we look forward to you next time.
Yeah.
Next, DHS. Go ahead. Is he calling? No? Okay. So we'll move on. Raising readers.
Good morning, Kim.
Hi,
Kim. I always like it when Kim comes to see us. Except Kim and I were talking before the meeting, and Kim seems to think that spring's actually going to come eventually, but I don't see it yet.
I hope so. Thank you very much for having me again this year to share some exciting figures and some exciting news about what we've been doing over the past year. You have the report in front of you. I just want to highlight a few things for you. Once again, the mission of Raising Leaders in Story County is to improve language and literacy development in children from birth through third grade and to nurture healthy parent-child relationships. And we do this through a variety of programs and services in Story County. With asset support this past year, we have continued to positively impact early literacy and expand our programs to serve more children and families in the county. Asset funding through the Story County Board of Supervisors has been provided through three focus areas, funding advocacy efforts, our out-of-school learning programs, and 0-5 programming. Approximately 10,000 of the books that we distribute annually, which is about 16,000 to 18,000 total, are through our Reach Out and Read program. This is our flagship program that got us on the map in 2006. Books are used at McFarland, Story County Medical, WIC, and primary health care clinics as part of their well-child checkups to check development of the child and to literally prescribe reading for the parents. This program is focused at 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, 18 months, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, and 5 years. We are currently in process to figure out how to get funding for 2-month books and 15-month books as they have added a 15-month well-child checkup at McFarland. So you may be hearing about 2 new levels next year. This program is funded specifically through private sponsorships at each level through service organizations in Story County, individuals, and businesses. In preschool programming, we currently have 70 children in our Story Pulse program. This is a program focused on dialogic reading with preschoolers, and we are in 3 school districts again this year, Ames, Nevada, and Colonesco. We were very excited last year to expand Colonesco, and that relationship has greatly improved. We added, or not improved, it's just continued, and we added 3-year-olds in Ames this year. So we were focused just on 4-year-olds in Ames, Nevada, and Colonesco. Ames Northwood has a 3-year-old preschool program, so we've added 3-year-olds, and that is what's bumped us up to 70 children. In August 2015, we piloted our new program, Super K, which is a kindergarten readiness program. It helped prepare 22 Ames 5-year-olds for a smooth transition into kindergarten. The program was successful, and we expanded to Nevada in summer 2016. Last summer, in its third year, 23 children in Ames and 20 children in Nevada, up from 9 in 2016, participated. We will again be running the program this year. If you have anyone who's interested, the sign-ups for Ames are online, and the sign-ups for Nevada are through the school office. We will be at Meeker Elementary in Ames and Central Elementary in Nevada, which is also very exciting that we've been able to be in an Ames elementary school the last 2 years, so the children really get to experience what a kindergarten classroom will look like. With out-of-school programming, this was the first year we received funding through ASSET from Story County for our out-of-school programs, which is very exciting for us. In summer 2017, our free summer literacy tutoring program, Summer Reading Buddies, expanded to Nevada for the first time. We had 2 sites in Nevada, which joined 8 sites in Ames. The purpose of this program is to maintain or improve reading levels and avoiding the summer slide so that when children start school again in the fall, they're at least where they were when they finished school in the spring and don't have to take the first 2 to 3 to 4 months just getting back to where their reading levels were when they finished school in the spring. We had 116 children participate in this program last summer. 94 volunteers made this possible. The children work one-on-one with a trained volunteer tutor twice a week for 6 weeks. We take the week of the 4th of July off. This summer, we will again be in Ames and Nevada, and we've added Huxley. So we will be working with Ballard School children as well this year. We will have 6 sites in Ames, 2 sites in Nevada, and 2 times in Huxley at the Huxley Public Library. We have sessions in the morning, the afternoon, and in the evening to accommodate parent schedules, parent work schedules, and volunteer work schedules. We utilize volunteers from freshmen in high school all the way up. We had a 92-year-old volunteer here in Nevada last summer, so there's no age maximum to do this program. 72% of the children last summer who participated in both the pre- and post-test improved their reading levels, 28% maintained. So we saw a lot of success with this program. As we saw a need to continue with some of the children that were in our Nevada program this summer, we added a Nevada site for our Harrison Barnes Reading Academy, which is a free after-school tutoring program that we've had in Ames the last several years. We partner with the Ames Public Library for the Ames program. We partnered with Central Elementary for the Nevada program. 7 children once a week are meeting with trained volunteer tutors on Monday afternoons to get a little bit more literacy help with their reading. The parents, we identified children that maybe would benefit from it from the summer program and invited them to register. It's been greatly successful in Nevada as well. We have... I believe we have 30 total. We have 23 kids in Ames and 7 in Nevada doing this program. Advocacy, we continue to work hard to make sure that we are considered a very important part of your child's literacy foundation. We believe that education is not just us, not just the school, not just the community, but everyone working together. So we strive very hard to make sure that we're all working together as partners to give children the best literacy foundation they can possibly have. We are now an office of 4. We hired through a grant with United Way a Story County Reads data specialist. She's a Raising Readers employee, but she collects data for Raising Readers programs and will eventually collect data for all Story County Reads programs, which includes Boys and Girls Club, YSS, all of the partners at the table for Story County Reads, so that we can really make sure we're not missing any children, make sure that we can fill in the holes where they're needed for their literacy development. And we're very excited to have Autumn. She's been a great addition to our staff. We've also moved. Autumn and I work out of the Ames Story County Administration building. And then my two program coordinators still work out of our ACPC office because that's where all their stuff is. And it works really well. I float, Autumn stays pretty much one place, and Judy and Lisa stay pretty much one place. We cannot do what we do without our volunteers. They're very important to us. Since July, we've had 202 volunteers track their hours. We know we have volunteers that won't give us their hours because they just do it because they want to volunteer. We continue to say, thank you, but we need your hours. We've had over 2,668 hours reported of volunteer time. That includes everything from one-on-one tutoring to labeling books to sorting fabric to whatever we need. We have volunteers that come when we ask them to, and they're amazing to work with. You have made a difference for Story County children through your supportive literacy programs, and we thank you very much.
Outstanding. Kim, great job. Give me a cost on adding the 2-month and the 15-month.
$15,000 sponsorship. So we order 1,000 books for each age group, and we have a very good deal with Scholastic because of the bulk of books that we order each year. So it's a $3,000 sponsorship for each one.
For each age group?
Yep.
Okay. Super. Questions, comments?
Congratulations. You're into Ballard.
Yes.
Not surprised with Steve Ray that you're into Colonesco. The backstory on Kim is I believe that you came out of the ground in the Nevada schools in a very substantial way. The story goes, and you didn't say it, but I'm sure you would tell it if asked, that if you can keep a child reading at grade level, that the likelihood of success academically, socially, professionally is dramatically increased. Kim is a part of that story. We do the testing, in fact, on the identification of the students that we want to immerse in our reading programs. and we follow up on that through the identification and the various programming choices. And there are people that will likely go on and be successes in life that I think Kim Handel will have be able to put her name to because of what she's done and the people that she brings to the table. It's not going to be a district. It's not going to be a set of parents. It's not going to be a school administrator. It's going to be a total effort. And she, congratulations. It's fun because I remember how we were thinking, like, is this a good idea in Nevada schools? We want to try it. I'm glad I come away thinking we should have done it sooner. So are you all moved in? Human services, fine. I know you were already talking about you needed space to put your books and whatnot.
We have books everywhere, but we're still moving stuff, yeah.
Jane, have you ever met our animal control officer, Sue McCaskey, sitting in the second row? We should maybe just wave at each other. Maybe someday reading to cats would be...
We talked about that with the AIM shelter, as the logistics of getting the kids to where the shelters are is what has kind of stopped that, because we talked about that with our Harrison Barton seasonings, going to the shelter and reading to the animals there. But it's definitely a cool idea. We bring therapy dogs to the Eastwood kids, and the kids at the Eastwood housing unit read to therapy dogs on Wednesdays every month, I think. So. Thanks.
Well, when Raising Readers hired Kim, Raising Readers was already a great small program. Now it's just a great program. Kim, you're doing a great job.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you. Next is discussion consideration of the FY19 health insurance renewal. Alyssa and Debbie Dean. So let's see. The background here is we got notified as we were starting the budget process that our health insurance increases were going to be substantial. We didn't know exactly what substantial meant, but we went through the budget process with a number of 15% in mind. And then we went back right at the end and we put roughly another 10% onto that in terms of trying to hold on to some dollars to ultimately get the self-insurance. Our first renewal offer came back, and it was about double what we hoped it was going to be. And Debbie and Alyssa have been working hard on it since then, and now hopefully are going to give us some options that the board can start to consider.
That's correct. Yes, probably 2 months ago, we got a renewal back from Aetna, and it was just shy of 30% for our health plan. So we did take it out for bid, and I'll let Debbie kind of talk about that. That's her area of expertise, and we have all that information back, and we'll go through that and then answer any questions and then give a recommendation to the board.
Well, as Alyssa mentioned, we went ahead and performed the due diligence, which in Iowa, our largest vendors are the names that you would already know, Walmart, United Healthcare, and United Healthcare has two flavors, two platforms, United Healthcare of the River Valley, commonly known as the Heritage Platform, and United Healthcare of the Midlands, which is basically referred to as the Choice Plus or United Healthcare Proper Network, and then our Aetna plan. And so we provided all of the data that we had available to us and asked for some additional data from Aetna to both Wellmark and United. And after a lot of back and forth, they both came back with bids, which allowed us to utilize that information to work with Aetna to see if Aetna wanted to sharpen their pencil. And after quite a bit of time with the underwriters and going back and forth and looking at bringing claims up to date to try to determine where we stood right now, this 10 seconds in time, Aetna chose to bring our renewal pricing down about 10 percentage points. It doesn't always work out that way, but this time it did. And so when we compare our current plans at Aetna, which are a $500 deductible and a $1,000 deductible plan, with as similar a plan design and similar a network as we can get from both United and Wellmark, because they both have more than one network platform. But when we try our best to compare apples to apples, we find that on those plans, the $500 and the $1,000 plans, now that Aetna has reduced their price, the pricing is not that significantly less at either Wellmark or United. Now, it is less, but part of the reason that it is less is because we have a specialty pharmacy card at Aetna. We have one that literally allows members to get the drugs that their doctors prescribe, for the most part, without any penalty being assessed and without onerous prior authorizations and steps therapies occurring for most medications. And so the Aetna platform is still a little more expensive than Wellmark or United, but that's the significant reason as to why. Now, that's a very short summary of a fairly long process. Do you want to talk a little bit about, you want me to talk a little bit about the additional options?
We can talk a little bit. You'll notice on the costing, we put Wellmark Blue Cross Blue Shield Blue Choice plan. That does have a different network than our current plan. There would be certain facilities outside of the state of Iowa that would be considered non-network, so they'd be out-of-network, which one of them being Mayo Clinic. So I don't know if Debbie wants to. Yeah. I mean, they're on here, and you can tell that the premiums are less, but it would be a different network than we currently have and our employees are utilizing right now. And they could see some, you know, if they use the Mayo Clinic, it would be out-of-network.
We tried to give you the broadest perspective that we could so that you could make the decision that you thought was best situated for the county. Blue Choice is, without any question, a good set of plans and a good network. It's just a different network. And so it is an Iowa-based network. And so, as Alyssa just mentioned, if you go out of state, and of course Mayo would be out of state, then you will move into the non-network environment. There's also something to be considered with respect to disruption anytime you move from one carrier to the next. You can't get away from it. Sometimes you have to swallow it regardless. But you certainly have different formulary medication lists. There's no way around that. Each vendor, and all three are good, set their own formulary. And so that makes the difference as to whether someone pays the lowest cost for their pharmaceutical or the highest cost for their pharmaceutical. And then you also subject members to the potential of having an additional out-of-pocket maximum in the same calendar year. And so that's those are considerations. There's just going to be some disruption. There's no way around some disruption.
As we move toward the goal of Story County becoming self-insured, is there a difference between these three companies, and is there a right spot for us to ultimately end up to manage our self-insurance program? And does that matter then?
Well, it matters. I don't know that it necessarily matters in the 2018-19 plan year, but it definitely matters because what you would like to see prior to becoming self-insured is you'd at least like to be with whichever vendor that is. You would like to have had your most prior plan year with them, because when you price a self-funded plan, the only one that's really going to know what your claim exposure is the incumbent vendor. So what we would want to avoid with certainty is moving to a new vendor and that very same year we move engaging in a self-funded plan. We would always want there to be a one-year lag. Now, all three of these vendors have their strengths, and all three of these vendors would do a good job with self-funding, and I wouldn't want to rule any of them out, because we would want to perform the due diligence in advance and make a decision as to what's the best spot for us. Right now, I would tell you that there would be absolutely no reason not to self-fund with Aetna. They have very formidable discounts in the state of Iowa, and discounts matter hugely when it comes to self-funding, far more than administrative cost matters. Discounts drive where you want to be from a self-funded standpoint. And then to go one step further, here in Story County, you have some unique situations with discounts sometimes with Mary Greeley and McFarland. Not negative, just sometimes there are specialty arrangements made which can also benefit you. But we would want to see what that looks like at the time we would begin to self-fund. But Aetna's discounts are good. Wellmark's discounts are good. United's discounts are also good. Aetna and Wellmark both offer some unique funding from a stop-loss perspective, which would be beneficial for the county.
The $6,500 plan, which would be a partial self or the first step, maybe?
The first step, right.
Okay. When I did kind of my math calculations and to come up with percentages and whatever, I came up with, based upon the 200 contracts, sorry, we have now, so that'd be about a $1.1 million we'd be looking at here, assuming that with the $500 and the $1,000 plan stay in place, and we would just pick up the difference of the $6,500, right?
Correct.
Yeah. And one thing I want to note on the 60, yes, we... And on the spreadsheet that we attached, we did price the $6,500 plan so that we could look at a partial self-funding scenario, not necessarily for premiums this year, but we're trying to get ourselves in a situation where we're not necessarily faced with the 30% rate increases. When you're fully insured, you know, there's no, it's not really a cushion, but, you know, we just don't have the flexibility that we had if you were partial self-funded in different areas. One thing I do want to note, on the $6,500 plan, the United Healthcare quote is on a different platform. It is on the United Healthcare of River Valley, which is a Select Plus HMO. And I think Debbie's had some conversations with United Healthcare, and they have made a statement that the network is the same. It just doesn't have all the bells and whistles with our current plan. And unfortunately, until you get into that plan, we don't know exactly what that would be. It's designed the same, but each carrier or administers their plans just a little bit different. So, obviously, the drug, I think the biggest piece on our Aetna plan is our drug card, which necessarily we couldn't get it matched comparably with the other carriers.
If my math was correct as I did the comparisons here, the difference between our Aetna now and the Aetna with the Freedom Formulary, the difference to the county looks like it's about $91,000, right? Correct.
The difference, we have the Freedom Formulary now, so if we were to omit that,
it's about $91,000. So that, I mean, over 200 contracts, or when you divide that out, it's not a huge, huge number,
right,
out of the 2.5 million. I just want to make sure that
right
math was going in the right direction.
We did look up into that a little bit further, and it did run us the disruption report, and it would impact about 10% with different employees with their drug tiers or their step therapy or pre-authorization.
Okay.
It's somewhat significant if we would change that drug prescription card on our plan. Yeah, and you'll notice there's about a 3%, they equate it to about a 3% difference,
mm-hmm,
between the Aetna plan with the Freedom Pharmacy and the Aetna plan with just the standard drug card.
Right, let's talk some more. So Loris brought up the $6,500 plan, which would in essence be the county buying down the front end, right? But it looks to me like, so you end up, if you go that direction, you're $900,000 less in terms of premiums going to the insurance company. So in order for our 200 employees to use up that $900,000, you have to have all of them at an additional $4,500 in deductible. And I don't think the math says that we're using that much.
No, we've run some projected numbers. There isn't a clear path to determine exactly what. And I believe, essentially, on a plan like that, we're ranging $350,000 to $400,000 in claims that the county would have to pay.
Right. So you get $900 to pay $400.
And understand, in the first year, we essentially could hit that twice in the first fiscal year because it started over January. So we'll have exposure July to December, and then more exposure again from January to June. And understand, we have that every year, but even now you'll have a 12-month period.
Which will only have two for the first 12 months, then every rolling 12 months,
right,
you'll just have the one exposure. But yeah, you will have the double exposure in the first year that you do this, the first 12 months.
So does everybody reset to zero on July 1st?
No.
Okay.
But they'll start over January 1.
Right. But I'm saying, so.
But then you will not start over until the next January 1 either, then.
Okay.
Yeah. You'll start July, then January, then January.
Because the deductible is a calendar year versus the fiscal.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it's, yeah.
It's really a very reasoned form of insuring for groups, actually, even quite a bit smaller than the county. Partial self-funding, there's really nothing new about that. It's been utilized for
years.
Well,
you have a maximum exposure that you're risking.
You do have a maximum exposure. It's a worst-case scenario. It would pretty much require an act of God for everyone to meet their out-of-pocket, but it could happen. And so I haven't seen it happen, but that doesn't mean
it
couldn't
happen. Well, and
the
math says that if you got 200, you're not going to hit your maximum out-of-pocket. That fast. So, it just seems to me that, Lisa, if I'm doing the math right, we budgeted somewhere in the $2.8 million range, and then we also got an extra $240,000 with the extra nickel, right? Which gives us, so if we stuck with that, if we stuck with what we have now and just said, okay, we're going to do the exact thing, then basically it eats up everything we put away. So it eats up everything we put away. We don't grow toward this concept of self-insurance. If we go the other way and we go to the 6500 plan, the odds are that we're going to have a portion of that money that we budgeted still sitting with us when we get to the end of FY19 to allow us to make further decisions of do we stick with what we've got, or do we go ahead and keep moving further and further down the road of self-insurance, which ultimately, if you draw the timeline out long enough, I believe that's where Story County belongs. It's just a matter of getting there.
Absolutely. It's just a matter of how we get there. Absolutely.
And so it seems to me that you would not be taking a whole lot of risk with what we have budgeted and what we know our premiums would be. We wouldn't be taking a whole lot of risk this year if we said, let's go with the $6,500 plan. We recognize that we're probably going to have a $400,000 and a $400,000 payment to make, but that gets us on track where we should be expecting then only a $400,000 payment in the future, and it allows us to manage some of the increases in our health insurance. Anything I say there that you think doesn't sound?
No, I think you're very much spot on.
Laura Smart, thoughts?
Well, when we started the budgeting process, we were at 15% growth. Found out we were half of that. We were 50% underwater. It probably, I can only imagine the hours that you've been spending here to get to this presentation, but thank you for the time. I think we are at that good point. I'm glad that we were prescient enough to put the nickel of the levy that we could. We knew that we were going to need it right away. And I think the self-insurance is where we're going to move to anyway, but I don't guess the math pretty much dictates the path we've got to go, because I think self-insurance is where the county needs to end.
Okay.
So.
So my numbers, because the numbers are pretty steady, right? If you do them right, my numbers are where Rick's are. I mean, the highest risk is in about the first year if we've got people hitting their maximums above what our record or what our path has said, because we have to pick it up twice. But we've got that cap on a worst case scenario on it. So I agree that as we look at health insurance continuing to rise. I mean, it's not like we don't expect an increase every year. It's just going to be the percentage. So at what point? So I find the $6,500 plan, you know, to be the way that we need to look at it. Okay, also for toward self-insurance with that goal. So then it comes down to which one of the plans are right, or have I jumped ahead here for everybody else?
Well, so I think whether we get I think $6,500 plan we can talk about later. The first thing we better talk through, so a couple things. Let's start with the $6,500 plan and just fully flesh that out, and then we'll move back up to the top and talk about what our appetite is between the three different companies and the multiple different plans. But this is all based on, so you look at the $6,500 plan, and it's got a amount of $475.09 for the 97 individual plans that we carry. That's not what we would charge. We would go back up and we would charge, I believe, the $710.83, because that's how we make up. First of all, we're paying 99% anyway, but that's how we make up the amount we need in order to be able to fund this plan.
And here's something I want to add to that. If the board chooses to go to the partial self-funding, the first year, in order to set our rates, we had to take a look at the COBRA regulations as far as what we can set those. And there's two methods that you can set those rates. And I did, we did have a phone call with our benefits attorney to make sure if this isn't the option the board wants to go, that we set those rates according with current regulations so we don't have any issues later on. You can use your past performance to set those, or it can be actuarial based. So the recommendation is to use the fully insured rate because that is an actuarial based premium.
That's the 71083.
That would be, yep. And you would use the exact plans that you're going to self-insure them to. So,
correct.
So if somebody enrolls in a $500 plan, it's those fully insured rates. You know, so the rates aren't going to change for the first year. What we're looking to do is to possibly lessen the renewal next year, because we may, if you stay fully insured, we may be in the same situation next year that we're in currently based on the utilization.
Yeah, we're looking for a way to be able to manage the increases right that we have come at us.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wanted to point that out, that wasn't...
So yeah, those are the premiums we're charging.
So I'll give my opinion. Unless there is a drug, so we're happy with the existing health plan we have. We're happy with the prescription benefit that we offer our employees. Our employees, by and large, seem to be happy. You know, this is a big deal. Marty and Morris didn't have to go through moving from flex to health insurance. It was a big, big deal. And we ended up putting a program in place that I think truly benefits at least 200 of our employees, but I would go even further than that. It's consistent, it's reliable, it's a positive program. And so my inclination would be, unless there is an absolute dramatic reason that we should change something, we don't change it at this point. And so for me, that gets me to the Aetna renewal, and then we talk about the $6,500 plan. Marty, Loris, do either of you have an appetite to start tinkering with the health insurance that we offer, or would you prefer to stay where we are? Clearly, United is a little less expensive, but it's an HMO. It's a different health insurance program than we offer our employees right now.
Debbie had said early on that you know, in her presentation, she'd said that, and that just, I mean, on the disruption side of things, I think that you said it, Loris has said it, and you guys have said it, that the fact that, you know, we have a good plan. And I'm glad I wasn't here, frankly, because he probably had to go to war with. But to me, I mean, we're really talking where we land versus where we started is a 4.8 increase year over versus what we paid to get to the 19.8 or 19.7.
Mm-hmm.
So where we thought we were going to be versus where we're going to end up, I don't think that's worth the disruption. Certainly, you know, when we moved to the 6,500.
Yeah.
Plan,
that's
discussion,
right.
that just dovetails it, but I don't think disrupting where we're at, what we offer. I like the fact that, you know, we keep retain within the network that we are, have a proper plan with, because I think we do have users that do go out of state for healthcare, and I'm not inclined to disrupt that at this time.
I think there are some issues where we can bottom line look at the price. I mean, you know, as we bid out roads, et cetera, and say, okay, this is it. We'll go with whatever is the best reputable, lowest reputable. But you're talking about a much more complicated choice here, and one that really does impact people and their families and impacts our employees and how we even would administer it. And so I think that we don't have to go with the lowest bid, if you will, or the lowest pricing. So then we get back to the disruption effort. And then when I start to look at the comparisons here, they're all in the same relative ballpark as a percentage of. And so to keep our consistency for our employees, for administration, for what we want to do in the future, including being able to provide a multi-year, possibly, you know, stay with them for the multi-year as we look at self-funding, those all to me are good reasons to stay with the Aetna health network option.
Okay. All right. So I'm here in agreement and sticking with what we got. And I believe I'm hearing agreement that we would move to the $6,500 plan. Is that fair?
That's where I am.
So then I'm going to look to Lisa Markley, and I'm going to say, anything you're hearing here that causes you huge budgetary concerns? It feels to me like we're doing something that should keep us somewhere in the range of what we have budgeted. Okay. There you go. Alyssa Day. Really? Anything you're hearing from the board that concerns you about the direction?
I just want to reaffirm to employees that they are the same plan, so the 500 and the 1,000, regardless of how the county, the back side of everything,
right.
How they fund that. But their exposure would be the same that we currently have.
Yeah, they still got the 500 and 1,000 that they have. It's just that next portion from whatever their cap is to 6,500 that now the county is going to be picking up instead of the health insurance company out of premiums.
Yep. And just one other thing to note is the premiums you'll see down here in the 6,500 plan, there will be a third-party administer cost. Roughly, I believe we $16,000 a year for that third party administrator to administer those claims in the Billing County.
So let me just make sure I understand. So we're $2.1 million plus a little bit. Plus we're going to pay our portions of the deductible up to $6,500. So we're $2.1 million. Plus our portions of the deductible, and what we're collecting are the rates that are shown under the Aetna Renewal Health Network option, $710.83 for an individual at 500, $1,800, $8,865 for a family at the 500, and then an individual on the 1,000 would be $672.92. We're on that line. That's what our employees are going to be paying, obviously with the county's contribution to that, as we go forward. Mm-hmm. Well, that's accurate, and is it clear to everybody what's happening? Laura, you
oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm fine. That sounds like a motion anyway.
Yeah. I would make that motion. How's that?
I believe, and I appreciate what has been done, and been spending a lot of time with Alyssa following up on this, and I would second that.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second. Further discussion?
None.
Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It is approved that we'll stay with our current plan with Aetna, except we're going to ramp everything up to the $6,500 deductible with the county absorbing that differential.
Right. And there'll be other contracts that come before the board concerning that.
Thank you, Alyssa. Thank you, Debbie, for what
you did
today.
That's a big time.
And overtime and weekends, I know there were phone calls.
Well, and where you started and where you got to.
Yeah,
you
got
to agree. It was a scary place that you got to.
Please go ahead.
Except for more.
Thank you.
No
minutes this week, so personnel actions.
Move to approve as presented.
Perfect.
Chitty,
aye.
Olson,
aye.
Sanders, aye. Consent agenda, we're going to pull item one and for discussion, and we're going to remove item 11. Did I get that right? It says 11.
Okay, good.
Yep. So we're pulling item one for discussion. We're going to remove item 11. Anything else? If not, I take a motion.
I so move present as presented with the exception of items 1 and 11.
Second.
Olson?
Aye.
Chi?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Item 1, limited agenda on the 15th. So I'll be in Washington, D.C. Loris will not be here either. It is a claims week, so we need to do something.
And I'll call in because you'll be in the air, possibly.
I'm in the air, so if my plane gets in on time, I'm there at 8:30. So as long as everything's good. But let's do this. Let's don't go through all the rigmarole of getting a conference call set up. Marty, just bring your cell phone out here and lay it down next to the
thing. Sounds good.
And if you can call, that'd be great.
Yeah, because I'll already be on the lane.
Extremely limited. I mean, we're doing claims. We'll do the things we have to do, but extremely limited.
Claims, action forms, and then.
Perfect.
That's good.
And I have a motion to that effect.
So moved.
Second.
Chi.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. That takes care of consent agenda. No public hearing items today, so we're two additional items. Consideration of a request from Rasmussen Bacon Funeral Home for assistance with the medical examiner transport equipment, equipping costs. This is, I think, ad lights. If you want to come up? Yeah.
Good morning, Justin. Glad to see your schedule permitted. You can be here.
Good morning. Good morning.
Justin, start by introducing yourself.
My name is Justin Rasmussen. I'm the owner of Rasmussen Bacon Funeral Home here in Nevada and Maxwell. And we currently have a contract with the Westaura County for all the medical examiner transports from place of death to anything to the Iowa State Medical Examiner's Office for autopsy. Just a little bit of brief history about what we do. We're dispatched usually by law enforcement or by the county MEI, whoever's on duty and gives us a call and says that they need a transport. A few examples of places that I have been called would be the Iowa State University dorms, Hilton Coliseum, Interstate 35, multiple gravel roads, railroad tracks, fields, ditches, rivers, Highway 30, Highway 69, a wind turbine construction site, Peterson's Pit, Robinson's Acres, multiple homes, apartment complexes, residence and trailer parks, emergency rooms, rest areas, towing yards, Hunziker Soccer Complex, and the VF Factory Outlet Mall. We're called whenever the death occurs. It doesn't matter the time of day, time of night, the weather, whatever. We're there, and we have 1 hour to respond. That is an agreement within our contract. And I've owned the funeral home since January of 16, and I can't think of one time that we've been over our hour, ever. And we had the contract when Rob owned the funeral home before I bought it, for I think 2 years. And once again, we never had any complaints about being on time. You know, when we need to do it. Currently, the funeral home gets $400 per call. So we supply the body bag, and then, like I said, we pick the person up and take them down for autopsy in Ankeny. In 2016, we had 28 calls. 2017, I did 34. And in 2018, thus far, we've had 12. So before our funeral home had the contract, Story County was paying, I believe, Mary Greeley or Story County Ambulance Service to take those people down for autopsy. And I think the number I was given was $1,200 per call, but I actually think it was higher than that. So if you do the math, since I've had the funeral home in 16, we have a savings of over $59,000 from what you would have paid an ambulance service to do what we're doing. So the reason that we're asking for help with this is I was called last week to a fatality on Highway 69. When I pulled up on E18, there was a Story County deputy that was directing traffic. I have a black van. It says RFH3 on the license plate. I have my funeral home logo on the side. And I put my blinker on to turn into where the accident was at. For 2 miles, they had the road blocked. He was trying to wave me through, and he had traffic coming from three directions, Highway 69 South, E18 East, and West. And I put my blinker on to turn left into where the accident was at. He got irritated, was waving me through, and I said, I need to turn. He wouldn't let me finish, and he kept trying to wave me through, and get out of the way. And I said, I finally just screamed at him, I'm with the medical examiner. Oh, okay, go through. So I went through two different checkpoints. There was a Story City police officer and another Story County deputy at the next 2 miles to get to where the gentleman that had died was at. When I got there, I was unfriendly greeted by a state trooper who said, you know, what the hell are you doing? And why are you here? And I stopped, and he came at me flailing his arms, and I said, you know, I'm with the Story County Medical Examiner. And then I got lectured on a busload of kids that had just driven through and seen this guy on the ground, and, you know, that had nothing to do with me.
Right.
But they just said, you know, we have a scene to protect, and we need to understand it. And so I'm driving a black van with funeral home license plates on it, you know, and I told him, I said, you know, you need to understand, you've got somebody who's died, a funeral home's coming, you all should be aware of this. You know, let's fill in the dots here as to why I'm here. And anyway, so I called his supervisor, the trooper's supervisor, to complain about the way that I was greeted and treated, because we've done this for many years, and I've never had that negative, you know, from law enforcement or whoever's on the scene. And the first question out of the trooper's mouth, the supervisor, was, what identification do you have that shows who you are? And I said, you have a point. I don't. I'm driving a black van, which, you know, I guess when I think death and funeral, I think black, but evidently not everybody does. I said, I don't have anything. So, you know, there's been instances like on, we had last year a rock truck flipped right at the construction on Interstate 35 southbound headed to Ankeny. So I took Highway 30 over and then got on 35 south. Traffic was stopped. So I'm driving on the shoulder of 35 to get to the wreck with my flashers on.
Right.
And people think, you know, who's this joker and what do you think he's doing? You know, and I would think the same thing, I guess, being in the car thinking, you know, who's this guy think he is? And so that's what we're asking for. It's a safety issue, I think, for the lights and things.
And you're going to pay half the cost, and you're asking the county to pay half the cost.
That is correct. I asked.
It's a reasonable question. Anybody have any issues with this?
I have no issues with it. I have just a question. And in unit, and I'm sorry to bring this up, just that for some reason the contract would change. Mm-hmm. There would be we'd want the lights back or and reverse you for them, or would you just get to keep the lights? I mean, you know, there's, since we're going 50-50 here on it,
I would suggest that this would be our skin in the game, and if someday the contract changes, then it's our skin in the game.
These
are your lights, right?
Yeah. I've got about $600 worth of lights that we had on another vehicle that we sold and we took off, and he's going to utilize those as well as the additional lights on this. And then it was, I think, $40 in signage from First Class Signs. It's a minimal thing from them, reflective, so that everybody knows who we are and why we're supposed to be there.
My other question related to on our agenda, it says a Story County badge, but when I looked at the quote, it's actually for a magnet to put on the side.
We were talking like a lanyard that would actually show.
That's what I thought, and then but I saw the quote for the, you know, the metallic signs, which was fine too. So I just wanted to clarify.
And the reason for that is chain of custody is important. I've been called to testify in murder trials for Story County. You know, people that have been murdered and I've taken down there. They have to prove who you are. So I'm constantly giving my name, who I am, and they're just kind of taking my word for it as to who I am. I mean, I've got business cards and things that we give out, but
yeah, the badge is.
Problematic
to me a little bit, and I added it here for discussion, and I want us to follow through with it. Okay, the actual contract that is signed, that was the provider agreement that that Justin has signed originally. You know, he's an independent contractor. He's not Story County employee. He's not under the control of the county. I think we need legal to step in to decide the badge situation, and I did not have that happen. I did not have anybody look at it from attorney's office. I don't know what kind of badges we can offer. I don't know if we can offer
Is, why would we not be able to offer something like this that just says Story County Medical or transport? Doesn't have to open any doors or anything, you know, but
shouldn't be a major issue. We've even got different ones for like vendors.
Yeah. Well, see, that would work then. A vendor type one would
just something that identifies who he is, what he's doing, and it's got our logo on it somewhere that just lets him know he's there on our behalf when he's out doing it.
You good with that?
Yeah.
Okay, then if he's good with that, I'm not going to worry about legal. It's up to you guys then if you want to do that.
Yeah, they can't ask us anything, and it says medical examiner transport on it. I think it's clear. I have a comfort level with it.
Rob Bacon spoke to me about it on Saturday, and he thought, because there are times that he does transports in your behalf too, that I guess whoever your designees would be, that we would want you to come in and get the lanyards in so that we kind of don't have those stories to tell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you already have colorful stories, and we need not have them. It should not be an imposition to any vendor that works in our behalf, in the county's behalf, to have to tell that kind of story.
That's unfortunate to hear your most recent experience, too. Almost all, it sounds like it could have created a safety issue in itself as you're trying to go there where maybe also the magnets and plus the lights, it's very clear.
I just, like I said, it's not, I wouldn't say, more often than not we're going to residences, but we're still going to a lot of public places where we have to park in odd places where we're blocking traffic.
Yeah, I thought of that.
You know, just so, but I also want to let people know that the Story County deputies, the Iowa State Patrol, the Nevada Police, Huxley Police, Story City Police are all wonderful to us.
Sure.
You know, it was a high-stress situation last week, and I know they had media troubles and everything else, and they were trying to keep people back. And,
I think it would be helpful for all of those law enforcement people. It's one less thing they have to put on their worry plate.
Absolutely.
Right? You got the ID? Boom.
So I suggest this and see if one of you guys make the motion. That we would agree to pay half of the actual cost for equipping the van. I would simply add that it's our expectation that someday when you get a new van, you're going to take care of moving everything and not come back to us to move it. And that Story County, additional skin in the game, will be providing a badge, working with Jody, an appropriate badge and our cost to the people that are going to be driving the transport. I think that's $400 a piece every time we produce one of those. If you guys are comfortable with something like that, please make a motion along those lines.
Just as a point of edification, you guys passed, you brought this before yourselves on December 8th, 15. The contract started in January 1st, 16, so we're a while away from the point where we'd be talking about changing up. So I would make a motion to pay half the cost for the lights and signage with consideration of the issue of a Story County badge for the designated people conducting transport on behalf of Rasmussen Bacon.
I would second.
Motion and a second for the discussion.
None.
Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Thanks.
Thank you, Justin.
Next, the consideration of using the county logo for an animal control event for a T-shirt. Sue, I hope this one is really easy. This one just seems like it should be really easy.
I know, I do. I prefer easy.
Yes. Thank you. Got it.
So my thought with Ken Hanna was that Story County Animal Shelter should fund one of those books, and it shall be the Good Dog Carl books. Do you ever read the Good Dog Carl?
No.
You know the Good Dog Carl books, don't you, Sue?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That's the appropriate book for a 15-month-old.
I'll have to check that out.
All right, so we're talking about doing a T-shirt for a fundraiser.
Yes, and possibly, you know, for the fundraisers that we would be having in the future. The county, as you know, has its own logo. However, for events such as these, when we are, in this case, I'm specifically talking about one on June 2nd with Della Vita. It's the wine place, the names, and it'll be, they want to make T-shirts, sell them a couple months ahead of time. We would go to the farmer's market with animals with them, and then there would be some sort of a fundraiser that evening. And so rather than use the county logo on the T-shirts, we kind of came up with some ideas and wanted to run those by you to see if it would be possible to use those rather than the county logo. I mean, I know, I didn't want to make that step.
Yeah, and it's appropriate that we're here talking about this, so I would be reluctant to say that something like this would become the animal shelter logo. That said, for a specialty use, I mean, I look at this and I really like number 4. It's simple and straightforward.
But for a special use like this with a T-shirt, I'd be inclined to say absolutely. I don't want to see a big sign in front of our animal shelter that has one of these logos.
No, no.
But
the intention is,
yeah.
And also there's another one this summer that there will be T-shirts again. We would like to use this logo just to represent so people know, you know, who it's for, but not use the county logo for it.
Stu had mentioned it to me a week and a half ago or so, just right, well, okay, a couple weeks ago, right as I was leaving, okay, from the kitchen. We talked about it a little bit, and so, and because this is an alcohol event, you know, but we kind of worked through that about, you know, there are all kinds of events where alcohol is a part. This is separate, and you can buy a T-shirt. It does have more of an adult message on it, but certainly that's more of a personal choice about who wants to buy them or not. But I had brought up the question of the county seal. I'm not sure we want the county seal on it. And then the benefit also about, you know, we should tell them it's for the Stray County Animal Shelter, but technically the fund it goes into is Friends of the Animal. So I think that the staff came up with a really good compromise. Yeah. For people who want to do a fundraiser without involving our official logo and kind of, you know, identifying who it's for without us being truly the legal entity involved. So I like it. And, yeah, I understand the pause then do include everybody but the birds and the snake. Mm-hmm. The occasional turkey. Well, turkey. But,
right. And I should say that these would be, whichever one of these would be on the back of the shirt. On the front of the shirt, De La Vita would like to have, you've seen these probably in a million different forms, all I want to do is pet my dog and drink wine. You know, something simple like that.
Since they are an adult one, but would they consider then something like maybe if we're in a kid size, instead of drink wine, is, you know, drink milk or something? You know, it's not
yeah.
fun, but
yeah.
Yeah,
we would kind of want,
yeah. Yeah.
All right, can I have a motion?
I would so move that we authorize the Stray County Animal Shelter director to work with De La Vita at this fundraiser and in other fundraisers, fundraising events that are going to use T-shirts, or do you want for other logo things?
You know, it would just mainly be unless they said we wanted to do like tote bags or, you know,
okay.
something like
for
that.
For promotional material, okay, to select item number four.
Okay. Number four was our favorite out there, but I brought in options, so.
I agree with my partners. I think number four has mine, just because you were always telling us about new and exciting animals you're taking in, so I would second the motion.
All right, motion is second. Further discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Thanks,
sir.
Excellent. Next, discussion consideration of Resolution 1890, Caslin Family Subdivision.
Hello.
Good morning.
Okay, so the request before you today is for an agricultural subdivision plat, the Calsum Family Subdivision First Edition. The applicant is Lori Hill through the Paisley and Singer Law Firm out of Ames. The property owner is Darlene L. Calsum. The size of the entire parcel is nearly 34 acres, located in Union Township. The current zoning is A1. There are two cities within 2 miles, and as we'll go through it, the subdivision has been routed to them. Ballard Community School District, Story County Ambulance, Cambridge Fire, Consumers Energy, Iowa Regional Utilities Association, and the South Skunk River Watershed. So the current land use, again, the zoning is A1. Currently, there's a couple areas. A few areas in row crop production on this site. There is a natural area that does extend through the center of the site, and that does include floodplain. The property is designated as agriculture conservation area and natural resource area by the C2C plan. So the proposed division Again, this would divide one parcel into two proposed lots. Lot one would be just over 24 acres and located on the north side, and then lot two would be 9.98 net acres located to the south. At this time, both of the lots will remain in agricultural production. The family does have plans, far future plans, to replat this as a residential parcel subdivision, but for now, these lots are not buildable. Approximately 7.5 acres are designated as floodplain and are included in a written drainage easement, to be recorded with the plat. Here's an image of the plat itself, proposed lot one to the north, and then proposed lot two to the south. 585th Avenue runs north and south there. Here's the drainage easement drawing. So just a little bit of background on the property itself. In 1999, just over 1 acre was divided from the northeast corner of the original quarter-quarter. In 2003, they enlarged that parcel to create parcel B here, and that's when the existing the subject property was created in its current configuration. Because of that date, the 2003, that's what required a agricultural subdivision plat. It couldn't be done through a plat of survey. Existing parcel B contains a single-family dwelling and an accessory structure that were both constructed in 1999. So just looking at the surrounding land use, it's 1.3 miles southeast of the city of Huxley, 1.4 miles south of the city of Cambridge. There are several dwellings within a half mile, and then 13 parcels within a half mile meet the minimum lot size in the A1 district for a single family dwelling. Just some site photos. This is looking south along 585th Avenue, looking north along 585th Avenue. This is looking northwest at proposed lot one. You can see the buildings on parcel C to the northeast there. This is looking through the trees at proposed lot two. And then looking southwest at proposed lot two. This is standing on parcel C and looking southwest towards lot one, and then lot two would be further to the south here. I'm looking west at proposed lot one, and then looking north from parcel C at the farm ground to the north. So agricultural subdivision plats have requirements including being for agricultural purposes, that there are no new development lots. The subdivision doesn't set apart any land for streets, alleys, dedicated open space, etc. The subdivision lies wholly within the A1 or A2 district. And then also no residential or minor subdivisions have been approved for this tract. Just some comments from the interagency review. The Story County floodplain manager did indicate that detailed elevations are not available for the site, so it's the responsibility of the property owner to identify the elevations if any development is proposed. Comment on the name. There's a subdivision close to this subdivision name, the proposed subdivision name, but the auditor's office felt like it was okay. And then Story County Planning and Development did ask if any restrictive covenants were proposed for the subdivision, and there are not any. Comments from the public, we did send notice to property owners within a quarter mile of the subject property on March 21st, and we did receive one email in support of the proposed division from a nearby property owner. The City of Cambridge waived the right to review the subdivision at their March 5th City Council meeting, and the City of Huxley approved the subdivision at their March 13th City Council meeting. So again, the primary goal for this time is to divide the agricultural property between family members. The subdivision meets all the requirements and standards for an agricultural subdivision. Lots 1 and 2 will be used for agricultural purposes. and would have to be replatted in order to become development lots. So planning and development staff's recommendation on the Kelsum Family Subdivision First Edition is alternative number one, which is approval of Resolution 1890, the Kelsum Family Subdivision First Edition.
Okay, well done. I've got a simple question. Doesn't really have anything to do with approval, but where's the access to Lot 2 and where's the access to the southern portion of what would be Lot 1?
Sure, along 585th Avenue there.
Good.
Yeah, so.
This looks like lots of natural area right there. I was trying
yeah,
to
it does.
Picture.
Yeah, I think there's a little area. I know it's hard to see. Oops. To the south there.
Right there. Okay.
That is access to proposed Lot 2.
And then you take access to the south part of Lot 1 through Lot 2?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Like I said, it doesn't have anything to do with approval. I was just curious about it.
Yeah. No, we're working on access right now. So access right now actually comes from the south and go up through because there's 5 acres.
Yeah, further south. Yeah.
Further south.
Okay. That's what it looked to me like. I just wasn't sure, and it's something you're going to have to work through before you think of anything else with this problem. Four questions, comments, or a motion?
No, when you look at the development that's happening just across the county line there, as you go down the highway and to White Oak, it's now Story County's looking to engage. I support this. It makes sense. Thank you, Emily, for your time in your department. I would move that we move consideration of resolution 1890, Kelsum Family Subdivision, First Edition Agricultural Subdivision, as presented. Put forth in SUP 0218.
Second.
Motion and second. Further discussion? Chi?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, a consideration of agreement of service between Story County Conservation Board and Snyder & Associates for Heart of Iowa Nature Trail paving improvements, $46,000, with the request to spend $21,500 from the Energy Transfer Partner money.
Good morning, Mike.
Mike Ross.
Good morning.
Back from Alaska.
Back in the warm country.
Right? Alaska. There was lots of snow in Alaska.
There was lots. Let's see. So this agreement, pretty self-explanatory, but secures services for very high-level planning and then some design work for the first phase of paving the heart of Iowa nature trail between Slater and Huxley. We had $25,000 budgeted in this year's budget for that, and the price comes in here over that, and the Conservation Board supports using the energy transfer money to make up that difference and get us going down the down this trail of getting the trail paved.
And it's an appropriate, completely appropriate use for the energy transfer money, which came to us for the Heart of Iowa, directly for the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail. So, any questions or comments on this one? We got several more things to talk to Mike about after this.
I believe my recollection is you probably spent a little bit out of the energy transfer dollars, or is this the first expenditure?
Where's Mark?
Good question.
Yeah. I think this is the second.
Yeah.
I think it's the second, but it's just like...
There was something else.
Yeah. If nothing else, you have been very... you held it out there up until the point, and as Rick alluded, that the back in 16, because they did breach underneath, that's the dollars came to us for this, so how appropriate would go back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just had a question because it says overall improvement needs on the trail. So will Schneider and Associates be the company that if we do more things as we move along, they'll still be the architect?
There is no, we're not under any obligation to stay with Schneider on improvements as a whole on the trail. My intention right now would be to engage Snyder for an overall kind of analysis and planning effort And then more specifically here, this contract to do the engineering services for this first section of paving. Now, I would also think it very reasonable for us to stay with Schneider working through that first phase of paving. So we get the design documents back, we go through a bid letting process, assuming we've got reasonable bids that we award. I would expect at that point then to go back to Schneider and say, would you administer this construction contract for us, which is standard for how we manage construction projects.
My question is,
beyond that, though, there is no understanding of a relationship beyond beyond this first phase.
Beyond this segment, okay. So, and then overall, I know there's the state requirement that after so much, even in the non-professional fee service, you had to have requested people to bid in. So do you think we're going to hit that level even for the engineering services, with Schneider and Associates?
So there's a state bidding requirement for vertical infrastructure at somewhere around $100,000. I'm not sure what that is off the top of my head. This doesn't have that. The engineering services don't fall under that requirement.
Thank you. That was my question.
The reason that, but it's a good question, and the reason we went with Schneider is that they do have history with the Heart of Iowa, and they're the ones that manage the High Trestle Trail project together with the assisting with grant writing for that, or assisting with grant acquisition for that. And so we thought that they had a lot of experience to bring to the table with this project.
And I'm not questioning Schneider and Associates, the choice of. I just was worried, were we going to cap out there? But thank you for pointing out it's vertical infrastructure. It
right.
doesn't apply to something.
Doesn't apply to anything. Yep.
Thanks, Mike.
You want to make a motion?
I will.
Yes.
I move that we approve the agreement of services between Story County Conservation Board and Schneider Associates for the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail paving improvements overall and design services for the first paving project.
Second. And the $21,500.
Oh, and the $21,500 from the energy account.
Energy transfer. We just need to have that on, right? I mean, that was part of our agreement, is we would agree that. So you're good with the second of that full motion?
With that.
Further discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes. Now we're on to TELT. We did bids in your absence. We were pleasantly surprised with the bids.
Yeah.
What does the Conservation Board expect us to do?
Well, I'm wondering if maybe I should be going more when we get bids.
Okay. We'll see how it goes next time.
Just as long as you don't expect sending us your receipts and expect to be reimbursed for those trucks. Okay.
We got six bids back. We were pleased with those bids. The low responsible bidder here is Boulder Contracting. They came in at our estimate for cost of construction, and so we have the funds in order to award this contract. Conservation Board last night considered it, and they are recommending that the Board of Supervisors approve this contract or approve this bid. That being said, if the board today approves awarding this bid, then we would come back to you for a contract signature once we get all of that put together with the contractor.
Super. Question for Mike.
None.
I've moved consideration of the Boulder Contract LLC for TELT Corridor Phase 2 construction for $930,799. And the additive alternate of $137,889 as presented.
Yep.
I'll second that.
Yeah, so total amount of $1,068,788 is what we're talking about here.
Further discussion?
None.
Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It passes, and I'm excited to get phase two going, Mike.
Very good. Very good. Thank you.
All right, now let's talk about the management of phase two and Shy Hattery.
Yeah, so just like I explained with the Heart of Iowa project and with the Schneider agreement, this is how we have been managing the TELC project as well. We don't engage in any engineering or I should say construction observation administration until we know we have a project. We're at that point here with your action. And so now it's time to consider an amendment with our engineer on this project, which is Shive Hattery, to move forward with administering the phase two contract. And it also includes some additional design services for phase two as well, in particular the interpretive components of the project. So, Dolores, I want to thank you for pointing out an error we had on one page of this contract in relation to a percentage charged back for reimbursable by the contractor. That has been corrected, and it has been previously noted, and we have not been paying that. However, this was in their standard boilerplate fee schedule. So,
and note that again, that we've not been paying this.
Yes, correct. We've not been paying it.
Great catch, my Lord.
Yes, and we appreciate that. So the one you have here today for signature should have a 0% on that page.
And I have just under reimbursable expenses, they had a plus 10% over cost.
Which you pointed out last time we went through this contract, right, and we went ahead with it. Mike talked to them. Right. And even though it's in the contract, they didn't charge to us, but you were 100% right to catch it this time. So appreciate you reaching out to Mike before this got too far down the road. And because you did that, it got corrected, and we're in the spot we're supposed to be in.
And thank you to them for agreeing, being so agreeable to waive what was their standard contract, right, and make that little adjustment. Thank you. That's a shot. Okay, I'll move.
I think I'll move after I get done.
Right. I'll move that we approve the amendment to the contract. And would you like some more specifics?
No, that's good enough.
Okay.
As stated,
as presented.
Yep. Do a second, Marty?
Yes, 1 second.
All right. Got a motion and a second to move the amendment of the contract, and this simply has Shive Hattery doing what they did for phase one, which is monitoring construction, reporting back to us. They did a great job with phase one, and it's the contract that was presented to us this morning does not include the upcharge of 10%. Further discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Thank you. Absolutely. No departmental reports today, no other reports. Public forum 2. If John wants to get up, we can hear from members of the public on anything going on in the public today. Since he's here representing the League of Women Voters, he won't serve his capacity as a public member.
Maybe I'll come back some
other
time.
You're welcome, John.
I always want to give you the option, John. So, nobody coming up on public forum number 2. Liaison assignments. Marty, I think it's your turn to go first this week.
It has had an oversized presence in mine, and I'm sure your lies here, the grant five discussion that we've been dealing with, and it has touched every day for many times. So I just was on it today. I will be revisiting it later today. CICS, our mental health region, is going to have an executive meeting here. The courthouse at 9 o'clock, talking about the possibility of regional employment of employees on a 24 basis. That's only, it's conceptual. It's, don't get too far down there on that. And a successful first meeting of, my first meeting of the Story County Housing Trust Fund, where we ordered all applicants, but we did do a walk back of 7%. Good to see there are a number of communities that were, made application, and you will see some things moving forward in them. Got several city council meetings with the Vader last night, going to Huxley tonight, and We have a seminal moment in the community of Nevada in regards to their economic development commission with retirement of a long-serving director, Alon Schultz. You will have at 7 o'clock tomorrow, the executive board of NEDC will lay out their recommendations on what they would like to see the full board adopt, and I look forward to telling you some good news this time tomorrow.
Cool. Outstanding. Thanks, Mike. Laura?
So tonight I'm going to be with the Ames City Council briefly, the Ames Area Metropolitan Planning Organization. We're self-certifying that we're addressing all of the major issues. I'm actually going to bring up over the next year if we could kind of look at, it's very, very Ames-centric, as well as the name implies, but if we could weave a little bit more into looking at some of the transportation areas outside of the city limits, just as a, it's a very cooperative effort anyway, but you know, just seeing if we can do a little bit of that. And then we're going to get ready. We're going to basically set our hearing for May 22nd on the draft plan for fiscal year 19 about how expenditures will go for, you know, SkyRide with this 2.0 breaking forward. Last week I did have HRDA, and I think the two key things out of the HRDA meeting are we finally have signed a lease. It is not for the building that the city of Boone owned, that Boone County Transportation was in, that private entity. We're going to be out at the Boone Airport, and they're going to revamp there so they can be washing the buses inside. They're going to revamp part of the hangar, and we'll have basically Kurt will have most of the offices. So it actually becomes a multimodal facility.
Plus, then you can go have drag races with the buses now.
That's right. It's a little two-seater, a little one in between. It'll be the starter. Very good, Rick. So I went to the Chamber Legislative meeting last Friday, and I know that you two were all already booked up. A key point to take away from there, two of them. One of them is that it's still alive about the possibility of supervisors being forced in the top 10. Well, it turned out the top 10. County with more than 60,000 in population.
To just say it the way it is, it's the possibility of completely taking away home rule of the states of the story again.
Thank you. Yeah. So, and a handful of other counties. I did briefly speak with Jerry Bain afterwards. He was not even familiar with it yet, so I just explained to him that the Senate version at least address the real issue about the concern about gerrymandering, and the Senate version does not have any county over 60,000 or the top 10 counties in the state in there. And I encouraged him to stay focused on what the concern is, which is the possibility of gerrymandering, and really how that bill would address it is at the same time that a county, the auditor would appoint a county redistricting commission, is that their results would also be sent to the Legislative Services Bureau. The other thing is there was some discussion on the state budget, and I would just like to see if maybe we could have, maybe through our director in external operations, and maybe just get a feel for what might be coming our way if our county departments are going to lose any money as a result of now that they passed what was a $35 million reduction even for this last quarter of the fiscal year, you know, how that may weigh in on us on any part. So, and I have Community and Family Resources on Thursday. This afternoon I'm going to go take the training with the staff about our new website.
All right.
So, yeah.
Hopefully they got the login situation fixed. Yeah.
Okay, well, or I'm not going to do that. Okay, that's a video. All right.
Good. Let's see. The only thing I didn't hear mentioned is today at 4:30 out at Indian Creek Country Club, there's a reception for Iowa Economic Development Director Ben Durham. And I'm sure that Dan Colhane would appreciate anybody who wants to crash that party to come on.
I plan on crashing.
Yeah, I like it.
And if there's nothing else, I'd take a motion to adjourn.
You got anything, Loris?
I was just going to ask. I have Debbie Durham at my schedule at 3:30.
Maybe it's 3:30.
No, but then there's 4:30 or 6:30. We got the confirmation. I was just wondering. Is there?
It actually starts at 3:30. So.
Thank you. Okay.
It does start at 3:30. Go. So at 3:30, if you want to crash.
We have clarity. Or you can always.
Yeah.
How many
left?
We'll do adjourn.
Okay.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We're adjourned.
Okay.
Good meeting.
I'm going to tell you, that's
fun.
First.